This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Turkey says Saudi Arabia has given permission for a search of its consulate in Istanbul to determine the fate of missing Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who vanished October 2nd after entering the building. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has demanded proof Khashoggi left the consulate on his own and unharmed, as the Saudis insist. Ravina Shamdasani is with the UN Human Rights Office.
If reports of his death and the extraordinary circumstances leading up to it are confirmed, this is truly shocking. We call for cooperation between Turkey and Saudi Arabia to conduct a prompt, impartial and independent investigation into the circumstances of Mr. Khashoggi's disappearance.
Khashoggi, who arrived in Turkey from the U.S., fled his native Saudi Arabia a year ago, fearing retribution after his harsh criticism of Yemen policy and crackdown on dissent. He was at the consulate for documents ahead of a pending marriage. President Donald Trump was asked if he had been in contact with Saudi authorities.
I have not. No, I haven't. But I will be at some point.
What do you know at this point?
I know nothing right now. I know what everybody else knows, nothing.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has had conversations with Riyadh about the matter. Heather Nauert is a U.S. spokesperson.
From the secretary on down, we have been engaged in this matter. This is something that we've been following. I understand that the president intends to speak with the Saudis, so I'm not going to get ahead of that conversation that the president may be having. In the secretary's statement, he said that we've seen conflicting reports about his status. We're not going to make any judgments about what had happened to him.
Meanwhile, Khashoggi's fiancée has appealed to President Trump to help uncover what happened to him. Zimbabwe's largest trade union is planning a national protest for Thursday over a new tax on money transfers linked to a spike in prices. The Zimbabwe Congress trade union is also demonstrating against lingering shortages and the decline of the local currency. This is VOA News. U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley announced Tuesday she's stepping down from her post after 18 months. The announcement was made public during a one-on-one session with President Donald Trump. Haley said personal reasons didn't motivate the decision.
No, there's no personal reasons. I think that it's just very important for government officials to understand when it's time to step aside from fighting for our country. But I will tell you that I think it's time.
Haley, who earlier served 8 years as South Carolina governor, ruled out a bid for president in 2020, insisting she'll support Mr. Trump's anticipated re-election bid. The president Tuesday said a second summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un would likely not occur until after the November 6th U.S. election.
We're talking about three or four different locations. Timing won't be too far away. We've made a lot of progress, and this meeting really is to, you know, people don't realize the importance of the first meeting. I mean, we said point number one, denuclearization, and they continue. Now, we haven't removed sanctions, as you know. You know, people said, what have we done? We haven't removed sanctions. We have very big sanctions. I'd love to remove them, but we have to get something for doing it.
Mr. Trump described the progress leading to denuclearization as beyond incredible. Syrian President Assad Tuesday issued a general amnesty for deserters and those who have avoided compulsory military service during the country's civil war. Those charged with deserting but who stayed in the country must hand themselves in within 4 months. Those outside the country will have 6 months to do so. Hurricane Michael is now a Category 3 hurricane on a 5-level scale and is moving closer to Florida's Gulf Coast, where Governor Rick Scott urged those living close to the shore to heed warnings and leave.
This storm is dangerous, and if you don't follow warnings from officials, this storm could kill you. And you cannot take it lightly.
Waves could reach over 3.5 meters by the time the storm makes landfall midday Wednesday. British investigators say one of the two suspects in the poisoning of a Russian ex-spy, Sergei Skripal, in southern England in March, was a medical doctor who worked for the Russian GRU Military Intelligence Service. Elliot Higgins of Bellingcat identified the suspect as Dr. Alexander Mishkin.
We managed to identify his hometown. We've had people go out there and speak to locals who confirmed it's him. They told the reporter who went out there from our partner at The Insider in Russia, they told him that the Mishkin had actually won the Hero of Russia Award, which is one of the top awards in Russia, and it was given to him personally by Vladimir Putin.
British authorities said the two Asians attempted to kill Skripal and his daughter in Salisbury using a Soviet-era nerve agent, Novichok. Moscow denied involvement. The International Olympic Committee said Tuesday that refugees will play a part again in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. It is the second such effort by the IOC, the last one being in Rio in the 2016 Games. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon's Ambazonia separatist movement has put forth a set of demands for what the group calls President-elect Maurice Kamto.
We want him to withdraw French Cameroon troops from our territory. And we also want him to release all Ambazonian detainees, including our president, Sisiko Julius Ayokabe.
Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement. Nigeria's opposition PDP touts the economic strength of its presidential candidate. Ugandan President Museveni unveils a program to fight growing crimes in Kampala. And the United Nations says reduction in funding is causing malnutrition levels to rise among refugees.
Children who have fled Burundi as refugees and are in the neighboring countries, they are forced either in overcrowded schools or taking classes.
That's UNHCR spokesman Baba Balak. Guinea-Bissau's parliamentary elections are still set for mid-November. And Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission says FIFA cannot circumvent Commission's decision to suspend Football Association President Aisha Johansson. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. As Cameroon continues to tally the votes for Sunday's presidential election, the separatist Ambazonia movement has put forth a set of demands for what the group calls President-elect Maurice Kamto. Mr. Kamto, a candidate for the opposition movement for the rebirth of Cameroon, declared Tuesday that he has won the election. According to Cameroonian law, only the Constitutional Commission can declare election results. Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement. He says the separatists are calling on Mr. Kamto to withdraw Cameroonian troops from the English-speaking regions. He also says the separatists are demanding the release of all Ambazonian detainees, including the group's presidential, the group's leader, Sisiko Julius Ayuk-Tabo.
Kamto, president-elect for French Cameroon, isn't our president. He is the president for French Cameroon. Right after the vote, our acting president, Dr. Sako, sent a congratulatory message to President-elect Kamto of French Cameroon and made it very clear, we want him to withdraw French Cameroon troops from our territory. We want him to withdraw their administrators. And we also want him to release all Ambazonian detainees, including our president, Sisiko Julius Ayuk-Tabe, whom they have had in custody for about 7 months and counting. These are the expectations that we are looking forward to from President-elect Kamto. That is assuming that French Cameroon current President Paul Biya would allow him to take over. We are hoping that he will facilitate the formal separation between French Cameroon and Ambazonia. That is, if he doesn't believe we are entitled to a country of our own, we are challenging him to a referendum, a United Nations-sponsored referendum.
Would you tell President Paul Biya the same thing of a referendum, or you want a country, an Ambazonia country?
We don't care whether Paul Biya is out or in. We have long told him we are no longer part of his country or his government. So whether he stays or not, it really doesn't bother us.
So, from your perspective, it doesn't matter who wins. You have broken away from what you call La République du Cameroun.
Absolutely. It doesn't really bother us who is in charge over there. What we care about right now is actualizing the independence of the Southern Cameroons. And let me also add, some people are thinking that because French Cameroon may be having a new president that we are going to lay down our defenses. That is not going to happen. We will fight, continue to fight, till the last person standing in Ambazonia to defend our people and defend our territorial integrity. And let me tell you something a little bit about Mr. Kamto, who has won the elections in French Cameroon. Kamto has been preaching a federation of 10 states. We have said we are not ready even for a two-state federation. We have tested freedom, and who can test freedom and let it go? We are going for nothing else than a free and independent Federal Republic of Ambazonia.
Kamto is from French-speaking.
Correct.
And you say he has been preaching a federation.
Right. During the elections, he said he would resolve the conflict by creating a 10-state federation. I don't know how that is different from what obtains now, because Cameroon, as it obtains now, that assuming that we were still part of it, is in 10 regions.
Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo says Nigeria requires a president with a sound knowledge of the economy. He says there is no way that a president with poor knowledge of the economy could meet the needs of the citizens, adding that even Jesus Christ understood the economy. Mr. Obasanjo, who has been critical of incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari's handling of the economy, reportedly said Mr. Buhari is not a very hot person on the economy. The opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, standard bearer for next year's election is Atiku Abubakar, once the vice president of then President Olusegun Obasanjo. PDP National Publicity Secretary Kola Olubondenya says Mr. Abubakar, who was chosen last Sunday as the standard bearer, has vast experience in managing the Nigerian economy.
The former vice president, Alhaji Atiku Abubakar, came through in a keenly contested presidential primary election of our party, the Democratic Party, because it was a natural choice of the delegates at the election. And as such, we emerged with a total of over 1,500 in an election in which the total number of delegates was 3,200 plus. So he won convincingly, and the process was clear, it was clean, and it was transparent. And the process was very, very, very credible. So much that all other aspirants rose to congratulate.
The former vice president has been critical of the current president, Muhammadu Buhari's administration, particularly when it comes to the economy. But when you talk to the administration officials, they think that the current president has done very well with managing the economy. Tell me, what would the former vice president do, say, if he's elected? How would he deal with the economy?
The former vice president comes with a huge experience in the management of Nigeria's economy. Remember, as a vice president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria under President Olusegun Obasanjo, Vice President Atiku Abubakar is coming with a huge experience on the management of that Nigerian economy. And I say this out of a clear conviction that while he was vice president and had the management of the National Economic Council, he supervised the deregulation of our telecommunication sector. And because of that, today every Nigerian has access to the telecommunication. He was in charge of the privatization policy of the administration, and he was in charge of ensuring that the middle class was preserved. And the administration introduced a low interest rate, which enabled public servants to have access to facilities to purchase their own home. And on the face of this, life was simple and life was of a major value to the average Nigerian. Purchasing power was high. And Nigerians looked towards him that all these efforts that he made in time past is coming back to ensure that lives become better for the average Nigerian. Unlike what we have had in over 3 years of the administration of President Muhammadu Buhari.
Kola Olubondenya is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Today is Wednesday, October 10th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni says his government will be able to curb the wave of violence that has rocked the country in recent days. Museveni also says his government will avail resources to turn Ugandan economy into a middle-income status. Mugumi Davis-Raka Ridge reports from Kampala.
While speaking at the celebration of Uganda's independence in Chotera District, Mr. Museveni told hundreds of celebrants that the government had installed CCTV cameras that would be used to detect crime in Kampala and neighboring areas.
The cameras are rolled out And I was sitting where I was sitting and seeing all the people who were eating jebukajo and those who are doing things they shouldn't do. I was watching them from one place. And we are going to roll out that program until the whole country, the main roads and the urban towns are covered.
Earlier in the day, the president launched CCTV cameras that will be manned by security officers. There's been a wave of violence, including assassination of high-profile government officials, religious clerics, businessmen and security officers. Notable of them was that of parliamentarian Colonel Ibrahim Abiriga, a prominent member of the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, and more recently, that of police officer Mohamed Chirumira. Both the slain officials were killed in the Kampala suburbs by men riding on motorcycles. President Museveni also told celebrants to use modern agriculture methods in order to improve their incomes. He said the government will invest in commercialized farming.
I call upon the leaders to really wake up on the issue of agriculture. On the government side, we have got a lot of programs which will help with agriculture. One of the programs will be irrigation.
More than 70% of Ugandans rely on agriculture, mainly subsistence farming. Uganda got its independence 56 years ago from the Great Britain. The country eventually witnessed violent regime changes with a coup after another during the 1980s. Mr. Museveni, who has been in power for over 30 years, assured Ugandans the country will not plunge into violence once again.
We have strengthened the army, especially in dealing with the international terrorism in the rural areas, because that's where the problem was. We built up very robust capacity. That's why we don't have any terrorists operating in the rural areas.
The theme for this year's occasion is Standing Tall, as we celebrate achievements for our 56 years of independence. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The UN Refugee Agency says it has had to severely cut vital aid programs for millions of refugees this year because it has only received slightly more than half of the $8.2 billion needed for humanitarian operations. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
A record 68.5 million people are forcibly displaced worldwide, 25.4 million of them refugees. As the number of people displaced by conflict and persecution goes up, the UN Refugee Agency notes the money needed to care for them is going down. UNHCR spokesman Barbara Baloche says this is increasing the suffering of refugees and internally displaced people. With limited cash, he says priority has to be given to life-saving interventions, food, shelter, and health care. He tells VOA that even these sectors are being cut. As a consequence, he says, in many refugee situations, malnutrition levels are rising, health facilities are overstretched, and shelters are becoming increasingly dilapidated. He cites Burundi as an example.
Children who have fled Burundi as refugees and are in the neighboring countries, they are forced either in overcrowded schools or taking classes under tree shades. And also protection interventions and support to unaccompanied children and victims of sexual abuse and violence, that also affects.
The UNHCR reports Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan, South Sudan, Syria, and Somalia are the six refugee and displacement situations most badly hit by the funding crisis. For example, in Burundi, it notes refugees do not have enough food to feed their families because of ration cuts. It finds in conflict-ridden DRC and in countries hosting Congolese refugees, young people in particular are unable to find work and get an education. The UNHCR says nearly 12 million Syrian refugees and internally displaced people are in a bad situation because the money available is just enough to provide them with the bare minimum needed to survive. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Parliamentary elections in Guinea-Bissau are still set for mid-November this year, despite doubts that the logistics can be set up in time by the government. Spokesperson for the Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens, Carlos De Silva, talks to Ricky Stryak about the impact of these elections on the unstable Guinea-Bissau political scene.
Gregory, is a lot of debate going on about this election because many people don't believe that the election will take place on a scheduled date because there's a lot of delay on the ground. For example, voter registration is going too slow. Until yesterday, there was 10,000 voter registered out of 900,000 expectant, and that is too slow for many people. This is due to the lack of biometric kits, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not just arrived late, but it was not enough also. And this is complicating things on the ground, and many people also are complaining that the process is not so clear and so on, you know. But I personally, I believe that the election can take place on a scheduled date because the government is entity responsible, you know, to announce the date they think election is possible. And they keep repeating that the election will take place.
You know, if it does take place, why is it important?
If the election is even one party gain with the majority, I think the Guinea-Bissau will find a better future and the stability will be. But if there is no majority party and people need to join together to form a majority in the parliament, that will be, again, very complicated.
How many women are there running? Do you know?
I remember the last time they decided that they will give this coming election 36 seats to women.
Is this the first time this is happening?
Yeah, this is the first time. Because normally you see sometimes just less than 15 women seats, you know.
There are not 15 female deputies in the Bissau Parliament.
Yeah, that is sad. That's less than that, you know, in the past. But now they decided, okay, for next election, it should be provided 36 seats. I don't know whether it is true or it's just political compromise.
The PAIGC say the ruling party is running. Are they running people for all 102 seats?
They run for all 102.
What does this mean for the president, who ran as a PAIGC member but is now more in the opposition than in the ruling party?
You know, in my country, normally you are the president, but when you are the member of the party before becoming president, after being the president, you're no longer any party. Even he had a problem with his former party, that is PAIGC, and the PAIGC is no longer trust him.
That was Carlos De Silva, a spokesperson for the Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens. He was speaking to Ricky Strike from Guinea-Bissau's capital, Bissau. Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission says World Football Governing Body, FIFA, cannot circumvent the commission's decision to suspend Sierra Leone Football Association President Aisha Johansson and her Secretary General Christopher Kamara. FIFA has said that the reinstatement of the two was a precondition for lifting Sierra Leone's suspension. The two had been suspended on corruption allegation. The commission's decision also means that this Thursday's game between the Ghana Black Stars and Sierra Leone will not take place. Anti-Corruption Commission Chairman Francis Ben Kaifala says fighting corruption is the biggest emergency for Sierra Leone and that the citizens are willing to choose the fight against corruption over football.
The law of our land is very clear that when a person is charged with corruption and standing trial, that person should be suspended until the end of the trial. And there is no exception provided under our laws for that particular law. So definitely we will not be bowing down to FIFA's demands.
Sierra Leone was supposed to be playing a game this Thursday, Mr. Chairman. What does that mean?
Well, I don't know what that will lead to. What I know is what the law says. And that law does not have an exception, so I don't know what that means. But I guess that means that we will not be able to participate in the game. As a country, I believe my countrymen who are very strong are ready for this. They believe in the fight against corruption and they know that corruption is what is urgent for Sierra Leone. And if this is a sacrifice we all have to pay to put the country on track in the fight against corruption, then we are prepared for it.
You talk about sacrifice, Mr. Chairman, and people say all over the world, football, even when people are hungry, they want to see football. They want to play football. Are you not sacrificing the people of Sierra Leone?
No, I'm not sacrificing the people of Sierra Leone. The people of Sierra Leone are overwhelmingly in support of what the Anti-Corruption Commission is doing. They are aware that this is not a decision taken by Francis Ben Kaifala. They are aware that this is what our law provides. And if we are going to be serious about fighting corruption, we cannot undermine our own laws in this way. We believe that FIFA has to understand that the world has moved on. The fight against corruption ought to be an exception to the general policy they have. And if they are not willing to try to align their policies with the trend around the world in fighting corruption, then there's a serious problem with FIFA, not with us.
The last time I spoke with you, Mr. Chairman, you said you hope that FIFA should be supporting your efforts. What do you mean?
We believe that FIFA should understand that we are fighting corruption in the game of football itself, as we are fighting it generally in the country. So if our processes are fair, I think what they can do is to support us in those regards. Don't forget, we did not bring in somebody to take over the SLFA. What happened is that the vice president took over after the president was asked to step aside. That is why you have vice presidents in the first place, when such situations arise. So FIFA cannot take such a blanket positioning as if somebody has installed a complete stranger to run the affairs of football in the country. No, it is not correct. So I think that there has to be some realignment with FIFA, with the global trend of fighting corruption.
Mr. Chairman, before I let you go, you said that you think that FIFA's position is nothing less than a violation of Sierra Leone's national sovereignty. Those are strong words. What do you mean?
Well, as you are aware, Sierra Leone is a sovereign state. Section 105 of the Constitution of Sierra Leone makes the Parliament of Sierra Leone the supreme legislative authority. Therefore, the laws of Sierra Leone are supreme, except where they have to make way for international law. FIFA's rules are not international law. They have not graduated into customary international law. So they cannot supersede the laws of Sierra Leone. So what, in essence, FIFA is saying is that their rules, which are not our laws or which are not even international law, should supersede our laws. And in our country, the law that governs the fight against corruption is very strong. It's among the strongest in Africa. We cannot undermine it simply because we love football. We have to make a sacrifice to make sure that what we do is in line with the law for the game, as far as the fight against corruption is concerned. So the people of Sierra Leone are very strong on this. If you monitor social media, if you speak to the typical Sierra Leonean, you understand that this is one decision which the country is unanimously in support of.
Mr. Chairman, we are always happy to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, James.
Francis Ben Kaifala is the head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. You're speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. As Cameroon continues to tally the votes from Sunday's presidential election, the separatist Ambazonia movement has put forth a set of demands for what the group calls President-elect Maurice Kamto. Mr. Kamto, who's candidate for the opposition movement for the rebirth of Cameroon, declared Tuesday that he has won the election. Chris Anun, Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement, says the separatists are calling on Mr. Kamto to withdraw Cameroon troops from English-speaking regions of the country. He also said separatists are demanding the release of all Ambazonian detainees. That's it for this Wednesday, October 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good Wednesday.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. Democrats are energized to vote in the upcoming midterm elections, hoping to defeat or diminish the Republican congressional majority. We talk with Democratic strategist Will Marshall, president of the Progressive Policy Institute, about the obstacles and incentives for Democrats in November. That's Press Conference USA, Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump visits Africa. Mrs. Trump is promoting child well-being during her stops in Ghana, Kenya, Malawi, and Egypt. The U.S. First Lady visits Africa on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Thank you.